If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of fellas who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hey, thanks, Ben.
Do you have any bits planned for the show? I don't.
I spent the weekend on a boat.
Yeah?
And it was great. I wanted to disclose something to you that I think you might appreciate, our listeners might appreciate, and literally no one else in my life would appreciate, which is this is a boat that could be considered a yacht even by some boaters. It's pretty big.
Yeah.
It's a sort of boat with a flybridge up top, the upper bridge area, the fupa, the upper bridge, the fat upper bridge area. And I found myself always standing to the right of the captain. In a Riker-like pose.
You were Rikering around a little bit.
I had kind of a Riker's weekend on this boat.
Did you ever get to the left and find yourself trying to tell the captain that somebody was lying?
I was tugging at the front of my jacket a lot. I was leaning up against walls wherever possible.
Yeah.
Oh, I was eating things by holding things up over my face and then dropping them into my mouth.
Did you find yourself sporting a full beard?
To the degree that I can sport one, yes.
Nice.
I did not shave for the weekend, but
good.
You likely wouldn't notice. wondering by saying that if you, in either your day-to-day life or your recreational life, you act as if any of our beloved characters from this show. Do you ever draw on them for strength, Ben?
There is a Twitter account that's called like Picard Management Tips or something like that. And like, I think it's like semi-comic, but also sometimes just some real shit that Picard is great at as a manager. And I don't have a lot of cause to manage people, but I have a couple of interns right now, and I don't think that, you know, like I don't...
You have a bunch of interns, you don't want to use Riker Management Tips.
No, yeah. And there's certain things in Picard's toolbox that you probably want to leave at the door as well, but I think that projecting an air of authority is something that Picard is great at that I am not, and I would aspire to that, and I don't know, I guess I always think about whether, you know, like most bosses in shows are bosses on suspicious grounds and are like capable of being, you know, having their reputations tarnished, and Picard is pretty much there because he's the best man for the job and he's not haunted by his past or anything. So I like to feel like that in itself is a management tip, and feeling some self-confidence in what I do professionally is, I guess, maybe something I take from the show. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes me think that, like, this is a science fiction fantasy show where spaceships shoot at other spaceships, and, like, that is something exciting to fantasize about. But, like, there's also the other end, which is, like, the fantasy of being a great person, a person better than you are in right. reality. And there are many characters on this show that I feel that way about. Like,
yeah.
wouldn't it be great if you were that poised or that yeah. cool?
And it's kind of an interesting, I mean, there's, I would say that most things that imagine a future in which you have everything you want at your beck and call, imagine awful people living in that kind of environment. Like, if yeah. you think about, like, the people in WALL-E,
yeah.
They're terrible and, you know, disinterested in their own lives. Yeah. And this is a, you know, a post-scarcity utopian future in which people actively work to better themselves. And that's a pretty optimistic idea that I like a lot.
Yeah. And it seems like people can grow beards pretty much at will. And that's something that I really admire too.
Yeah. Or put an extra 12 inches of their beautiful red locks on,
yeah.
In the doctor's case,
anytime. Let's turn it on over to season 3, episode 8, "The Price," a title which I guess has to do with the price of doing business. Were you able to tie this in anywhere, Ben, with the story?
I guess so. The episode starts with Troy getting into her quarters at the end of what we can assume is a long day. She's a little wiped out. She's trying to get the replicator to make her some chocolate ice cream. The computer's totally, like, replicator shaming her. Like, she wants some fucking ice cream, and it's like telling her that that's, you know, not going to be fitting within the nutritional standards that have been set for this unit, and you're going to need to override if you want to.
The computer's like, can that leotard really take on another dish of chocolate ice cream?
Yeah, that's some sexist bullshit right there.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Fuck you, computer.
What do you think a bad day is like for Troy, though? Listening to people's bullshit problems?
Maybe. I mean, I can imagine having a long day in her job, you know? You've probably got a couple of kids who've lost a parent on an away mission. You probably got, like,
from 9 to 11. You got some slick backs to talk to.
Yeah, you've got some people in the engineering department who are traumatized by trying to fuck things on the holodeck and realizing what was slick in there wasn't a hologram.
Yeah,
because they got in there right after Riker. I mean,
why is my holodeck warm?
That would be really upsetting.
Yeah.
So she's, like, just trying to get settled in, and she gets that hated phone call from Picard going, like, hey, why don't you come party with us? Kind of kind of not optional.
Yeah.
And she tries to get out of it by saying, I don't have anything to wear. And he says, like, throw on any old thing and get your ass up here. And so she gets up there, and it's a little reception in 10 forward for a bunch of delegates who are going to all put in bids for a wormhole that has been discovered in orbit of the planet Barzan. This is a wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant. So this is our first introduction to the idea that there's, like, lots and lots of the galaxy that just aren't accessible by the Federation, because they're so far away. Like, it's like 100 years at warp 9 type of distances.
Right.
Which is interesting, right? I think that, like, there's a couple of, like, TOS episodes where they hit warp 9 and they're, like, leaving the galaxy relatively quickly. And I think this kind of resets the scale of the galaxy relative to the speed that the ships can go to, like, there's still a lot out there that is unaccessible, and that's interesting. And this wormhole is a very valuable natural resource if that is the case.
Right, and what makes this one special is its predictability. It's like the what's that geyser in Yosemite? It's Old Faithful.
Old Faithful. I think that's in Yellowstone, Adam. But
people think it's a geyser that goes off every 2 hours or whatever, and its predictability gives it all this value, right? If you know when to catch the bus, and the bus is always going to be there, and it's always going to the same place, like. This is mass transit for the galaxy.
Yeah.
And everyone wants on.
And so they stand there looking out the front windows of 10 Forward, and they see this huge space butthole open up and then close. And then she gets to meet the cast of characters that have shown up. And there's a guy named Seth Mendoza from the Federation.
Pleasure to see you again, Counselor Troy.
There is a guy with a lot of shit on his face, a lot of meatloaf on his face.
Leor of the Caldonians, madame.
He's got lobster hands and a seven head.
And then there is this this real handsome devil named Devononi Rao.
Two cream, no sugar.
What is Lloyd Braun doing here?
Who is there to negotiate for another alien race that isn't present. They didn't bother to design any of these aliens.
My good friend Raoul is the best hired gun in the business.
Hired gun?
My good friend Mendoza means that I'm a negotiator who serves a variety of clients. On this particular occasion, I represent the Cresalian.
And Raoul is really reading from that Geordi LaForge playbook.
Fucking seriously.
He does a lot of staring.
Yeah. I mean, he's also playing from the Riker playbook, I guess.
Why is it cool when Riker does it, though?
I don't know.
It just is.
Like, the male gaze works for him
in
a way that it doesn't for Geordi.
Well, when you pair a male gaze with a deep V, I think that's the winning combination.
Sure.
When it's just gaze or just V, I don't think you win. That's what Geordi is missing. He has no gaze at all. I just figured it out.
Whoa.
No gaze.
That's heavy.
He needs a V that goes down and then around the back. That's how much of a V he needs.
Yeah.
It is a guiding principle on which Starfleet is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
This episode, I think, more than any we've yet seen, maybe, or as much as any we've yet seen anyways, demonstrates how gross the writers of this show must be when it comes to being around women and their thoughts about how courtship works. Because it is like the first several beats of Troy's relationship with this guy, Raoul, are so fucking stomach churning. Like it's a lot of him like putting his hand on her hair uninvited, and like he just comes on so strong, and it's like it's hard to imagine that Troy doesn't like hit him with some mace and kick him out of her apartment.
Yeah, it feels like they stack scenes this way where I'm imagining the writer's room is like cackling about how great it would be if women thought this way.
Yeah.
Like it's this is out of the Fantasy Woman playbook.
Yeah, and I just find it so, like, I think that Troy at this point is a character that has some dimensionality to her character. Like, I think that obviously the female roles on the show are not as well written as the male roles, but it's like she is a three-dimensional person in the show, and suddenly she is just a sex object. And I just, it's so weird to see it done after they've spent so much time attempting to like develop all of these characters to just kind of flatten one out for an entire episode.
Yeah, and I want to be really clear with this description. He doesn't do anything to earn the intimacy that he achieves with her, and I want to really like put quotes around earn, like first of all, but like he rushes right into Troy's quarters after they meet. They have sort of a meet cute, I guess, where they just stare at each other.
Right.
And then he just sort of walks into her quarters, puts his hand all over her hair.
Yeah, she's on Ancestry.com in her quarters, and he like barges in and She's like, oh, I was just looking up some personnel, and she was totally looking him up. So, like, I guess that sort of plants the idea that she was into him, but, like, I think even if she was, the way he behaves in this scene would turn anybody off.
Okay, I guess the way I really want to say it is, like, he doesn't earn it as a character.
Right.
Like, there's no... It just doesn't make any sense that he would walk to her quarters, she would let him in, and then he's messing up her hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just a leap too far. There's no setup at all for it.
When you leave this office, who are you? Oh, so that's how it goes. You never do. You never do leave the office.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, perhaps just the efficiencies that need to be brought to bear in a television drama that only has an hour to get its story out of the way, but just
yeah,
doesn't work.
And this is emblematic of the whole episode, I thought. Like, this is, they had time to build this character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's 15 minutes of tension spread over 45 minutes of show. Like, it's just a little thin.
Right.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
The negotiations open up and some Ferengis show up and they're pissed off that they never got invited to the negotiations to begin with. And the prime minister or whatever of the planet is like, yeah, like they can come. We don't, you know, if they want to bid, like we're not turning anybody away. And the deal with this planet is that it's like a real dump. Like it's something that Geordi would be negging the shit out of if they ever showed it.
Yeah.
And they don't have any natural resources. So this...
Geordi's still drying off from the last episode.
This wormhole is a big come up for them. Like, they finally have something that they can use to get some stuff. And they're essentially auctioning off the licensing rights to the wormhole. Like, whoever wins this negotiation is going to be the authority that controls access to the wormhole and, I guess, therefore trade and stuff. And it's unclear, like, I guess the Federation wants it for, like, purely, you know, scientific and curiosity reasons because the Federation has plenty of resources. But the Ferengi are there and they see a dollar in it. And the other aliens that are there are, like, by turns... a research-oriented species and a just kind of generally peace-oriented species, which is who Ral represents. And so, like, there's just a lot of, like, shenanigans about the different delegates, and eventually the Ferengi use some tricky handshake gag on the Federation ambassador that causes him to get super sick, and Riker has to switch hit and take over negotiation on behalf of the Federation. And it's just, it's like, you know, high tension about who's going to win this wormhole. And Troi's kind of caught in the middle of it because she's, you know, a colleague of Riker's, a citizen of the Federation, and a friend of Riker's, but Ral is there sweeping her off of her feet totally unaccountably and is the kind of favorite to win. And he thinks that Riker is his biggest competitor for this.
Speaking of feet, there is a comeback from commercial on this episode where it's just a close up of one of Troi's feet being rubbed with salad dressing, and
they don't cut away for this for like 2 or 3 minutes. Like,
I was going to say, like, it is a real world 30 seconds of close up on a foot and like on an emergency blanket. It's amazing.
Right. It's the kind of shot that like in an animated thing would maybe make sense because they could just loop the hand rubbing up and down the foot a couple times, drop in some dialogue. They don't have to go to the trouble of animating the lip sync. Or, you know, the more complicated shot in that scene. In a live action thing, this is pretty insane.
As when I saw it, I immediately laughed, and then I became horrified that this could become the next Bill Tilly holocard. I mean, I'm going to leave that up to him, but
yeah.
God, what a really unique scene. in this season.
Dat Troyfoot, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, this is emblematic of all the moves that Raoul puts on her. Like, it's some weak shit. It's like, running your hands through her hair, rubbing on some feet and toes. And it's another thing that just sort of belongs in that what a writer's room must think it takes to sweep a woman off her feet playbook. Like,
right. Like, who are these animals in this fucking writer's room right now? Like, given that, like, some of the true heights that have been achieved so far in season three, like, I mean, the last episode is so good in so many ways. And then this is like, who are these turkeys? Like, what the fuck do they think is going on?
I don't know. We've had 3.5 seasons of character development for Troy, and it's all gotten her up to this point.
Yeah.
Like, where all it takes is some hair petting and some foot rubs, and that's it. And so she's enjoying this time with Raoul. I mean, much to our consternation as a viewer. Like,
yeah.
It's actually working. Yeah. And she makes sure to let her best friend Beverly Crusher know how her toes are being curled in one of the weirdest, grossest... how would you describe this scene, Ben? Like,
Foxy workout scene?
I feel like they wrote this scene in reverse. Like, they wrote it from the perspective of how do we get Beverly and Troy into skin tight spandex stretching around? We got to give them a reason. Oh, they've got to talk about a boy.
Yeah, like, what is it going to take for us to have Gates McFadden bending over in front of a mirror in which we can look up her butt, basically? This episode is a real holocaust of of sexism. I was about to suggest that maybe we were just jealous of this guy, like, macking on Troy and it working out. Like you hate the dude that the girl you have a crush on in middle school winds up dating, kind of thing. But no, it's horrible.
I feel like they shoot these makeouts different for her too. Like, whenever Riker beds an alien, like, he'll wing her around and turn her away from camera so that you can't really see shit going down. But
totally,
man,
the camera is in Troy's face
you get
every time.
Dirty singles with Troy, like, every time, and you are just right up in that face. Like, I feel like it's unfair.
And the guy is using a lot of saliva in these kisses. When when he pulls away, like, her mouth will be, like, visibly wet. It's real nasty.
Oh, man. Yeah. That Lloyd Braun. Really lays it on her. Why can't Riker be more like Lloyd Braun?
You never could compete with Lloyd Braun!
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
So here's what's going on with the negotiation. They're, like, concerned that the Barzan people who have claimed that this wormhole is this great, great thing might not know what the fuck they're talking about because they don't have manned spaceflight. Like, all they've been able to do is shoot a probe into this thing. And, you know, if you think about the probes that we shot when we didn't have manned spaceflight, like, worth being a little bit suspicious of. So they're going to mount this operation where Geordi and Data are going to take a shuttle pod and go through the wormhole. And the Ferengi catch wind of this, and they flip out, and they think it's so unfair. And they're like, fine, just take your own pod through, or, like, we'll share all of the information we get if you want to just look at our notes. And they're like, nope, we're taking our own pod. Nothing you can do about it.
How did the Ferengi pod game get so tight compared to the Federation? Like, Geordi and Data are in a twin-size bunk bed out there.
Yeah.
And the Ferengi pod actually looks kind of badass.
Yeah, it doesn't look terrible. The shot of Geordi and Data in the in the cockpit through the front window of the pod.
It's real cheese.
One of my favorite, like, laugh out loud. Like, it's so funny, that shot of them. They're really, like, shoulder to shoulder, just wedged in there. And you know, like, they have the pod up on, like, something where a couple of grips can rock it back and forth when they're going through the wormhole. So much fun.
Why would they take the pod instead of a craft? Also,
yeah, why not a Previa?
Yeah.
Maybe
they get a garage full of Previas. Why not take one of those?
Maybe the sticker value on the Previa, like the blue book on the Previa, is high enough that they don't want to risk it. So they throw a bunk bed out there, you know?
Like, maybe Wesley borrowed the Previa.
If they burn that bunk bed, like, they can go get another one at IKEA like that.
That's true.
You know, obviously they're out their priceless Commander Data and their chief engineer, but, you know.
I thought this was a real interesting choice now that you bring it up. Like, we're going to send our two guys into this wormhole and we're just going to cross our fingers that that this thing goes where we think it's going to go. Why wouldn't the Federation shoot a super advanced probe to do their own follow-up?
That's a great question.
It seems like jumping right to a manned craft is, that's dicey.
Pretty dicey, yeah. And so,
I think it just speaks to the value that they see in this thing. Like, it's worth the reach.
Yeah.
And it's another opportunity for Data to potentially
take
die.
Life Data wanted to stick his arm through.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Data, why not your whole body?
Yeah. Data's ongoing suicidal hokey pokey.
Exactly. So they get through and they're through there with the Ferengi, who are, you know, just belligerent dickheads, and they start to like pick up some weird readings on the wormhole. Data is picking some stuff up on the shuttle pod sensors, but Geordi is also seeing stuff with his visor, and they tell the Ferengi, like, this is not quite what we thought it was going to be, and it's behaving real weird over here on this side. You've got about 40 seconds to get back through this thing because something strange is about to happen. And the Ferengi are, you know, filled with hubris, and they tell him to go fuck themselves. So Data and Geordi make it through just in the nick of time, and the wormhole reappears and then, like, zips across space. And I guess, also when they get through, they realize they're in the Delta Quadrant, not the Gamma Quadrant.
Yeah, they got on the wormhole subway, and they thought they were getting off at one station. They check the map, and it turns out they're on 42nd Street.
Yeah. They thought they were getting on the E, but they got on the A. They're very confused.
And the Ferengi just get off, and they're like, this is our stop. We're going to stick around.
And those dudes get lost in space.
Yeah. They're not listening to reason.
There is a there's an episode of Voyager that catches up with these Ferengi, by the way. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They like crash land on some planet and like essentially turn it into a Ferengi outpost. It's a lot of fun.
God, what would it have been like if it had been swapped completely, if instead it were Data and Geordi who got trapped on the other side?
Yeah, the most Aspie planet of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Data and Geordi would have been pretty cool, actually. Like, that's one thing that the Prime Directive would prevent, is them, like, inflicting their cultural values on whatever the local population is.
Yeah.
The Ferengi have no such moral compass. Like, they're like, cool, we're going to crash land here, start setting up some fun profit times.
Geordi and Data sort of pre-visit this notion, too, in the pod. Geordi's like, man, I do not want to get stuck out here with you in this bunk bed. And Data's like, well, look on the bright side. You'd have me to talk to. And there's like a super pregnant pause where Geordi is like actually sizing up how he would fuck Data if left out on that ship long enough.
Well, Data is programmed in multiple techniques.
Yeah.
I think they could find an accommodation.
I think they could. Not a lot of room to move around in that shuttle pod, though. Probably limited to a few positions.
Yeah, that is like back of the Volkswagen level fucking.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
Rael has talked Meatloaf Guy out of being a competitor. He basically says, like, it'd be a lot of work administering this wormhole. Your people are more interested in just doing research. Like, you're not going to enjoy being in control of this thing. He's like, yeah, you have a great point. All right, later.
Yeah, lobster hands out of contention.
Yeah. And at some point, he comes and tries to, like, shit-talk Riker or, like, outmaneuver Riker. Like, Riker is chilling out in 10 Forward, and Rahl comes and sort of tries to lord the fact that he's banging Troy over Riker. And this was, like, one of the only, like, great moments in this episode because
yeah.
Riker goes, I thought you were a lot sharper than that. I bang everybody. I am not precious about the people that I bang. Like, I will bang you before you leave 10 Forward.
In fact, I've already banged you, and you don't even know it.
Yeah. You're going to stand up and realize you're walking funny, Rahl.
I couldn't help but notice the dog you tried to big me with. Well, I banged that dog also.
They get back to the negotiating table. Lobster Hands is gone. The Ferengi has no-showed based on the missing pod, and so it's down to Riker and Rahl, and the red alert bell goes off, and Riker's like, "Fuck, I gotta peace out," and runs up to the bridge, and the Ferengi are trying to shoot missiles at the wormhole, and there's a fun shot here where Worf like bullseyes the missile in space with a phaser. And then
did Rahl... you notice the order of operations on that moment though?
The
missile gets shot by the Ferengi. Picard goes, Worf, shoot that thing down. And Worf goes, I'm putting it on screen. And then he shoots it. I thought that was kind of a boss move. Like,
yeah,
check it out, guys. You're gonna want to see this.
Worf like threw a hula hoop in the air and then threw a frisbee through it. Like,
yep. He's the cool guy at the dog park.
Totally. Trick shot Worf. So Rahl comes on the bridge with the prime minister lady that's been conducting the whole negotiation and talks the Ferengi down off the ledge by saying, hey, I've just actually won the bidding, but I'll let you Ferengi make free use of the wormhole and we can like negotiate the terms of that in good faith later on. And the Ferengi guy is like, all right, I'm cool with that. And Troy is like, wait a second. This is some bullshit, because a minute ago, Rahl told me in confidence that he is, in fact, an empath. He's, in fact, part Betazoid. He's been manipulating the shit out of everybody. And now he's lying, because this Ferengi does not, in fact, have any stress in his head. Neither does Rahl. This is we are being shown
some theater.
Yeah,
we're watching some people play acting.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm done with you, Rahl. Like, you came on strong. We had some hot bangs, but... fuck you.
And this is the moment when Riker reveals his dog to Rahl. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and sort of gloats and throws it in his face.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. He saves his dog for later. I think that's an important lesson.
Right.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment. Recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
They defuse this situation. The shuttle pod comes back through the wormhole and basically just radios up and goes like, yep, this is not a valuable natural resource after all. Sorry, guys. And Rawl realizes that he has negotiated within an inch of his life to win a worthless wormhole. Yeah. It's only stable on the one side.
Yep. And they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, there are a couple of Ferengi back there, and they ain't coming back. The end.
Probably the worst episode of season 3 so far, right?
Without a doubt. As I was watching this, I was thinking this was going up on Mount Armus. Like,
yeah.
It has a rightful place up there, for sure.
Totally. And it's like all the worse because of how... Like, if you look at the episode just before this, the enemy, like, there is a bunch of stuff going on that is so cool. Like, the cinematography in it is great. The just, like, the pacing, the way the episode opens is amazing. This episode is, like, it feels like such a far backslide. I mean, it's, like, Troy has less of a character in this episode than she did in season 1, episode 1, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super gross. And when I was reading about the production of this episode, everyone agreed that it looked great on paper. Like, this is a strong script. We were really excited to make it. And then almost universally, everyone thought that it was a total misfire. Like, yeah. Visually, it's weird to read about that conflict between, like, the hope of a script and the reality of what it looks like on screen. Like,
yeah, I mean, we're applying all of our 2020 hindsight to this.
Yeah.
And I guess I can relate. I have lots of, I mean, my career is littered with projects that I thought would be better than they actually were.
Sure.
You know, it's very rare that you do something as complicated as making an episode of a television show and everything is humming and perfect. But
in the same season that you get Picard several times, you know, able to succinctly describe the mission of humanity to other alien races, you get a scene with Crusher and Troy in the exercise room, like,
yeah,
talking about toe curling. Like,
right.
It's amazing how great the show can be and how bad it can be all in the same breath.
Yeah, that scene, like, disqualifies Star Trek from ever passing the Bechdel test ever, no matter what.
Right. Right. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
In a episode littered with Shimoda, did you find a single and best drunk Shimoda?
Incredible! Drunk Shimoda!
I guess I'm just going to have to go with the whole production. Like, I'm going to say that, like, the writers, the people that approved the script, the people that produced the episode, the people that cast the episode, the director, like, the music is weird. Like, I think that I have to say that Star Trek is the drunk Shimoda in this episode.
I didn't just destroy the episode. I destroyed every episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Every episode, everywhere. And then I inflated a sex doll, and I've been plowing away at that in the corner ever since.
It's my punishment.
We have no law to fit your crime.
Oh, man. Kevin Uxbridge is my new favorite Star Trek character. I noticed you're getting a lot of praise for your impressions, and I am getting none.
I think people really like your
impressions, Ben.
I think I'm standing on your shoulders. I think that your impressions have a subtlety that mine often don't, and it's like how in any comic duo, the straight man never gets his due, but right. is in fact the one that's making the comedy work.
Sure.
I think that's the honor that you have in this situation.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, you know, my Shimoda was more clumsily articulated than yours, but I'm on the same team. Like, I think the series benefits from this episode being destroyed,
yeah,
and never mentioned again. There's nothing canonically that matters in this episode, I guess, except for the Ferengi you say that show back up in a Voyager episode down the road. But yeah. Like, is that critical to the story of Star Trek and the world of Star Trek? I don't know.
Maybe not.
But I think there's a net bump if this episode is gone forever.
Yeah.
And so my Shimoda, I think, is the episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think we're kind of coming at the same point from two different angles.
Yeah, we're definitely spit roasting our Shimoda here. What do we have coming up next time? It has to be better than this, right?
Season 3, Episode 9, The Vengeance Factor. The crew's attempts to mediate a violent dispute between warring clans are sabotaged by a mysterious assassin. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Nope. I feel like we're really in the dead zone of early season Star Trek, where I'm not remembering anything at all about these episodes right now. And before there were little bits and pieces.
Well, let me try some clarifying Cosby on you, and I'll see if I could jog your memory.
Okay.
You see, Theo, when a man has to bring peace to warring factions, he finds out that a girl that he wants to bang has been genetically engineered to be lethal to all the other clans, you see.
Oh, okay. So she's a poison girl.
She is a poison girl who you would not want to put something in her drink, Rudy.
Okay.
Does that bring you back at all?
It makes me more interested in seeing it. It does nothing for my recollection of the episode.
I feel like everybody in this episode looks like they're in a hair metal band.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Looking forward to it.
I'm down. I'm down with this.
I feel like there's also a lot of, like, 50-gallon oil drums with fire in them.
Oh.
A lot of like, industrial decay sets, which are fun.
They finally decide to spend some money after taking a couple episodes off.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, me too. Sounds good. Well, if you'd like to talk about our upcoming episode, the episode we just reviewed, or any of the other episodes that we've talked about, you can join the conversation on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on Twitter as @CutForTime, and Ben's over there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
We're on Facebook as a group and as a page. Just search for The Greatest Generation. I'm pretty sure you can find it by doing that. You can also go over to Reddit, the Maximum Fun subreddit, and the Greatest Gen subreddit are both real fun, lively communities that we're checking in on all the time.
This show is made possible by the support of our listeners. So if you feel like joining one of the many that have contributed to our show's production, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate. We really appreciate it.
More than 100 people are doing that, and that's so awesome. We really appreciate it. We should thank Dark Materia for our music. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a very vengeful episode of The Greatest Generation.
Our show can occasionally be vengeful. I feel like we expressed some vengeance in our review of this episode.
Yeah, we sure did.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.